Hello and welcome to Killing Arden, a exploring adaptation session looking at how to turn Arden Fathom into Fathershum. Arden of Fathom. That suggests he's just very deep. How to adapt Arden of Fathershum into an audio, a full cast audio adaptation, something that we're looking to do in the next year or so going forward. So far, it's not actually been too complicated. In fact, actually, we've spent an awful lot of time talking about, you know, background sound effects and, you know, gravel and the right kind of guns and things. It's so far, yeah, they're very, very well. There was one point last episode where we were going, oh, this bit might be tricky. And then someone actually explained what had happened verbally. So it was fine in the end, actually. We spent about 20 minutes discussing something we didn't really need to discuss. But, you know, hopefully it was entertaining. Hopefully this will be entertaining. Hopefully you're not questioning your life choices as we are. In the room, we have Alan, Emma, Eric and Sarah to read through scenes 10 to 13-ish. We might go a little bit beyond there. We might get edging towards the death of Arden. Arden must die. But we're up to scene 10 and he's still alive. This is, for all my lightness of tone, which is possibly a bit disrespectful, because this is a true crime story. This is Arden did die, and these people did come to something of a sticky end, so I should pull it back, my enthusiasm back a little bit. So this is a true crime story adapted 40 years after the events that actually happened. And yes, we are coming to scene 10, and we have a scene with Arden and his wife, and we also have Franklin and Michael. So I'll ask Sarah if you could be Arden, Emma if you could be Alice, Alan if you could be Franklin, and Eric if you could be Michael. Two of these people are trying to murder one of the other people. Franklin knows nothing, and is on Arden's side, broadly speaking. So we'll just read on a little bit and see where we are at. So here enters Arden and his wife Alice, Franklin and Michael.
See how the hours, the garden of heaven's gate, have by their toil removed the darksome clouds, that soul may well discern the trampled path wherein he wont to guide his golden car. The season fits. Come, Franklin, let's away.
Or you did pretend some special hunt that made you thus cut short the time of rest.
It was no chase that made me rise so early, but, as I told thee yesternight, to go to the Isle of Sheppey, there to dine with my Lord Cheney, for so his honour late commanded me.
Aye, such kind husbands seldom want excuses. Home is a wild cat to a wandering wit. The time hath been, would God it were not past, that honour's title nor a lord's command could once have drawn you from these arms of mine. But my deserts or your desires decay, or both. Yet if true love may seem desert, I merit still to have thy company.
Why, I pray you, sir, let her go along with us. I'm sure his honour will welcome her, and us the more for bringing her along.
Content. Sarah, saddle your mistress's nag.
No, a begged favour merits little thanks. If I should go, our house would run away, or else be stolen. Therefore, I'll stay behind.
Nay, see how mistaken you are. I pray thee, go.
No, not now.
Then let me leave thee satisfied in this, that time nor place nor persons alter me, but that I hold thee dearer than my life.
That will be seen by your quick return.
And that shall be ere night, and if I live. So farewell, sweet Alice. We mind to sup with thee.
Exit Alice.
Come, Michael. Are our horses ready?
Aye, your horse are ready, but I'm not ready, for I've lost my purse with 36 shillings in it with taking up of my master's nag.
Why, I pray you, let us go before, whilst he stays behind to seek his purse.
Go to, sirrah. See you follow us to the Isle of Sheppey, to my Lord Cheney's, where we mean to dine.
And exeunt Arden and Franklin Michael remains.
So fair weather off to you for before you lies Black Will and Shake Bag in the broom close. Too close for you. They'll be your ferryman to Long Home.
Right. Okay. So just doing some little admin-y things. There's a couple of words that were wrong. A missing word, I think. Oh, no. A choice of where you put the word your. Okay. Editorial choices as to the placement of your. Okay. Not that any of that really matters to anyone here. That's just me whiffling on to myself. What is Arden talking about when he first enters? I mean, it's trippy trampled pace rather than path, or that's the version I'm looking at. But it's like he's just suddenly going, I am turned poet. Let me arrange. Thing. It's quite a sort of opening gambit here. Strange. It's interesting what's going on there. Sarah.
It is interesting the way he's becoming less, like at the beginning of the play, he was certainly forthright. And we were talking about, you know, we were talking back then about how to play him, because there were options. You could play him as sort of forthright, but kind of noble and sensible, or you could play him as forthright, but quite rude and a bit cruel. And we were like, oh, which version of him is going to fit best? Whereas by now, it's difficult to play him as anything other than sort of, you know, pensive and thoughtful and quite poetic and quite noble, because his language has got more flowery. And I know you said that several authors worked on that, so it could be down purely to that. Or I'm wondering if it's because he has had all these sort of, not premonitions exactly, but all these forebodings about, you know, terrible things are about to happen. The fact that he now seems to be in a better frame of mind, maybe that's enough to just sort of make him a bit more poetic, sort of, you know, time to sit back and smell the roses kind of thing, and just you know, be just chill out. Maybe he gets poetic when he chills out.
Well, the thing is, the previous scene was, you know, the journey home, or wasn't it? I think I'm right on this point, where he encounters Chaney on the road, and it's I think that was a return journey home to. So he hasn't seen Alice for a while, and this is the following morning by the looks of this, by all this flowery thing. So maybe on a you know, he slept in his own bed. Maybe from his point of view, he had a very enjoyable night. I'm being a bit coarse here. But I'm just thinking maybe he's just, everything feels a bit less insecure. He feels more secure of himself than he may have done earlier. And that moved in a... Maybe that's what's going on here. Because this, again, from an audio perspective, you know, we want to set a time for this. You know, I'm thinking, you know, morning again. We're back to where we started. In a sense, he's back home. It's the beginning of the day, and again, we have this cat and mouse sort of game between Arden and Alice of what's Alice's intentions with this dialogue. You know, who's going to go, who's not going to go. And of course, as we get to the end of this sequence, we're not at the end of the scene by any stretch of the imagination. Michael tells the audience, before you lies Black Will and Shake Bag in the broom close, too close to you. So, you know, bad things are going to go down. But we're not really given a proper indication that that's imminent. I mean, the previous scene set up, oh, they're going to try again, I think. But not necessarily the clarity of this. So there's a sort of interesting turnaround of action here. If we're doing this episodically, this might be the beginning of the final episode. I'm thinking three parts. But I don't know if that's... We might just release it in one go. I don't know. I don't know how these things are going to work. But it feels like this could be the beginning of Act 3, of a three-act structure. Because I want to give some indication of time between scene 9 and scene 10. Any other thoughts, Eric?
I find it interesting that in this scene, Alice goes, oh, but you can't go, you're like sort of leaving me behind. There was a time when you wouldn't go anywhere for any other purpose other than to be with me. And then after Franklin goes, oh yeah, totally just sort of come with us. And then as soon as that, it's like sort of not unclear, but sort of, is she wanting him to stay to be murdered in the house? That seems a bit stupid.
What is it? Is it a? What is it? Is it for Franklin's sake? I mean, this is the thing. This is about saying, "Oh, I would go," you know, and setting up a situation where Franklin can say afterwards, "Oh, she was doing this, and she was doing this, and she can't be in on it." Kind of logic, Sarah.
Yeah, that exactly. I think she's dissembling, and like you know, the minute they actually say to her, well, come then. She's like, oh, yeah, no, I'd love to, but I can't. I think that was definitely for show.
Yeah. And it is an element for the audio that, you know, the performance of Alice at this point needs to be a little unsubtle in the sense if it was on stage, you can sort of demonstrate the artifice that is going on, whereas in audio all you've got is your voice. You can't do little looks to the audience here, so it's got to sound perhaps a little over the top, that's life. Seem to have lost Alan, we will carry on regardless and see how we get on. Everybody's off apart from Michael. And so we've got a Clark coming up and Alice returns and I can read in Mosby, I suppose, and the little bit. But we've got this little bit with the painter Clark. He's not a Clark. His name is Clark. He's a painter. Do not get confused. Sarah, if you could be the painter for this little sectionette. Michael has just indeterminately placed the word your. Enter the painter Clark.
But who is this? The painter, my co-rival that would needs win Mistress Susan.
Oh no, Michael. How doth my mistress and all at home?
Who? Susan Mosby. She is your mistress too.
Aye. How doth she and all the rest?
All's well, but Susan, she's sick.
Sick? Of what disease?
Of a great fever.
A fear of what?
A great fever.
A fever. God forbid.
Yes, indeed, and the velourdane too, as big as yourself.
Oh, Michael, the spleen prickles you. Go to. You carry an eye over Mistress Susan.
Afraid to keep her from the painter.
Why more from a painter than from a serving creature like yourself?
Because you painters make but a painting table of a pretty wench and spoil her beauty with blotting.
What mean you by that?
Why, that you painters paint lambs in the lining of wenches' petticoats, and we serving men put horns to them to make them become sleep.
Such another word will cost you a cuff or a knock.
What, with a dagger made of a pencil? Faith is too weak, and therefore thou too weak to win Susan.
Would Susan's love lay upon this stroke?
Then he breaks Michael's head. Now, for the listeners at home, we haven't met Clark for ages. He was a, as mentioned helpfully by Michael earlier, the painter, my co-rival, who would needs win Mistress Susan, because Alice keeps bargaining with the various murderers or would-be murderers, using Mosby's sister as leverage to say, you want to marry Mosby's sister? Because, hey, why not? And so everybody has been bartered in this way. And the painter supplied poison, but is also commissioned to create a murderously poisonous crucifix thing earlier, of which a plot strand we have heard nothing of since. So we might be hitting a section where we might think, is this cuttable? Is our journey here really necessary? So we shall see about that. Otherwise, it's sort of an interesting sort of back and forth. But dramaturgically, it does feel like something that it might be a bit confusing coming in this late if we split it into episodes. So that's moving me away from my episodic thought. Any other thoughts on this little bit? Otherwise, we'll put it to bed. No? Okay. Right. Alan, as you're back in the room, we're going from then he breaks Michael's head towards the end of the scene. If I could ask you to read Mosby, and I'll read Green for the moment, and we'll get to the end of the scene. So, physical violence has occurred. Here enters Mosby, Green, and Alice.
I'll lay my life, this is for Susan's love. Stayed you behind your master to this end? Have you no other time to brabble in, but now, when serious matters are in hand? Say, Clark, hast thou done the thing thou promised?
Aye, here it is. The very touch is death.
And this, I hope, if all the rest do fail, will catch Master Arden, and make him wise in death that lived a fool. Why should he thrust his sickle in our corn? Or what hath he to do with thee, my love? Or govern me that am to rule myself? Forsooth, for credit's sake, I must leave thee. Nay, he must leave to live that we may love. May live, may love. For what is life but love? And love shall last as long as life remains. And life shall end before my love depart.
Why, what is love without true constancy? Like to a pillar built of many stones, yet neither with good mortar well compact, nor with cement to fasten it in the joints, but that it shakes with every blast of wind, and being touched, straight falls unto the earth, and buries all his haughty pride in dust. No. Let our love be rocks of adamant, which time nor place nor tempest can asunder.
Must be leave protestations now, and let us bethink us what we have to do. Black Will and Shakebag I have placed in the broom, close watching Arden's coming. Let's to them and see what they have done. Everybody exits to go and watch a murder. Did anyone bring any popcorn? Well, it looks like they've commissioned Clark to do the thing. The very touch is death. Very touch is death. So we've got potential assault in the shrubbery, and crucifix of death. So many options here as to where this is going to go. But in the middle of which, Alice and Mosby just have a little tete-a-tete. They're just having a little back and forth. It's suddenly lots of splits of focus are at the moment, which in an audio context worries me slightly, just a little bit, because whereas before it was very sequential, you'd have this scene and then you move to this scene, you move to this scene, even amongst a main scene. Here we're sort of zooming in and out in ways that might be confusing, so I'm a little worried about this scene. Eric, you waved.
Yeah, I was going to say this whole like love without true constancy bit is basically like a few scenes ago they were plotting to murder each other. So yeah, that's real love. Yeah,
but again, it's the thing: is this performative in front of an audience? Again, you know, everybody here knows the murder's being planned, so you know, it's this thing. But what is life but love? That's one to go on a mug, isn't it, Sarah?
Yes, Mosby was certainly plotting to murder Alice. I don't know that Alice was plotting to murder Mosby. She was just wanting to break it off, I think. So I think this is definitely performative on Mosby's side. On Alice's side, it's interesting that I guess Clark and Green are so deep into the plot that it doesn't matter if she's demonstrative towards Mosby in front of them, but it's interesting that she feels relaxed enough to do that. What was I going to say? Yeah, I think as far as the zooming in and out on audio, I think you would have to add in a Mosby to Alice's speech there, just so that you make it, because the beginning of the speech is definitely to Clark. And so I think you'd maybe then have to throw in or what, Mosby, hath he to do with thee, my love? Something like that. You'd maybe have to, like, Jemmy in a a Mosby there, just to kind of make it clear to the listener that you, that she's, you know, changed subject, that she's talking to someone else now. The other thing I'm just slightly intrigued by is what's happened to Michael, because when it says he breaks his head, I mean, depending on how he's broken his head, that's quite serious. Is he laid out cold on the stage? You know, is he dead? Is he, what's happened to Michael? Like, the fact is, three people come into the room. Clark has just broken Michael's head and nobody comments on it. It's like, are they stepping over his prone body? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things of fiction until relatively recently, is that you can always just punch someone unconscious and there are no consequences. They'll just wake up later just going, oh, that, no, concussion, brain, these are bad things that you can't just knock people out. I expect in this context, it's just, yeah, breaks Michael's head. So, and that's the stage direction. That's authentic. Does sound very violent rather than he hits him slightly, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he beats him maybe, or, you know, yeah. I'm just trying to think of how these things are normally phrased in stage directions. He breaks his head is quite distressingly specific.
Eric.
I was going to say, she does comment on it, though. She goes, I'll lay my life, this is for Susan's love. And then stayed you behind your master to this end. Like, so you have nothing better to do than to argue and, like, waste time when I'm trying to kill somebody, my husband?
Yeah. Have you nothing better to do? It's interesting, again, also just the way that Alice and Mosby are talking to each other, and just the fact that Alice, I mean, you were talking about, you know, it's not unreasonable that they're talking about this in front of other people because they've brought so many people in. But Alice just clearly has been telling everybody about that she wants to murder her husband. I mean, it's like you've got these low-grade semi-theatricals going on of, oh, my love for you is undying, let us go and do these things. And then, yeah, should we murder him? It's she's told everybody, and it's like Mosby. The reason why Mosby is so out of this a lot of the time, why he's constantly going, maybe I should just get out of this while I can, is because she's just clearly a liability in terms of getting away with this in the end. You know, first rule of Murder Club: don't tell anyone about Murder Club. I mean, that's one of the elements, because a lot of this follows the source material quite closely, is that, you know, real life murders often are really badly organized and people talk a lot. And that's actually, in a sense, weirdly authentic. Anyway, okay, there's lots of little niggly questions about this scene, but nothing overtly a problem. We could just do it and hope that the audience follows us. Sarah, then Eric, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, just picking up on what you just said there about her telling everybody. Yeah, presumably she did. I mean, presumably the reason why this feels like weirdly authentic is because she did do that. She did involve loads of people and she did tell a load of people. I'm guessing that's in the original account.
A lot of people got arraigned. A lot of people got punished. I mean, we've always got to take a little pinch of salt as to what actually happened, but certainly the account is quite detailed. But that doesn't, I say, mean it's all true. Certainly it was widely reported, and at least as far as the author is concerned, or authors of this text are concerned, that's the story. That's what they're using. Eric.
I was just going to ask about the broom close. Is it, because, like, in the last, it's a broom close, but then you've got the broom, comma, close watching, but then broom close, comma, watching? it can make a difference in the script. So it's kind of like, ooh. basically, I'm just asking if that is not a comma at the end, but obviously, it's one of those cases where we ignore the punctuation, maybe, in green speech.
They're placed in the broom. Close watching Arden's coming. I think the comma there is right.
Cool.
That works. Though the scansion on the line might be different. I have just re-blocked it, as it were, because the version we're looking at might be misaligned. So that also may make a difference. This is why we do the boring, detailed work that listeners at home won't care about, because they won't even be able to tell. Alan.
Yeah, no, it makes sense to me to have a comma there, because Broome, in other words, the scrubland, and that they are watching closely.
Yeah. Though the broom may also be close. I mean, it could be literally simultaneously. But in the meaning of that sentence, yes, they're close watching. Okay, let us travel to the next scene. Scene 11, Arden and Franklin, we've already got. We'll stick with those. Emma, if you could read the ferryman, I think that will be fine. It will get. We may have to move people around a little later on, but we'll go with this combination for the moment. Here enters Arden and Franklin.
Oh, ferryman, where art thou?
Here enters the ferryman.
Here. Go before to the boat, and I will follow you.
We have great haste. I pray thee, come away.
Aye, what a mist is here.
This mist, my friend, is mystical. Like to a good companion's smoky brain that was half drowned with new ale overnight.
For pity, but his skull were open to make more chimney room.
Friend, what's thy opinion of this mist?
I think 'tis like to a cursed wife in a little house that never leaves her husband till she have driven him out of doors with a wet pair of eyes. Then looks see as if his house were afire or some of his friends dead.
Speak'st thou this of thine own experience?
Perhaps, aye, perhaps. No, for my wife is as other women are, that is to say, governed by the moon.
By the moon? How, I pray thee?
Nay, thereby lies a bargain, and you shall not have it fresh and fasting.
Yes, I pray thee, good ferryman.
Then for this once, let it be midsummer moon, but yet my wife has another moon.
Another moon?
Aye, and it hath influences and eclipses.
Why then, by this reckoning, you sometimes play the man in the moon.
Aye, but you had not best to meddle with that moon, lest I scratch you by the face with my bramble bush.
I am almost stifled with this fog. Come, let's away.
And, sirrah, as we go, let's have some more of your bold yeomanry.
Nay, by my troth, sir, but flat knavery.
And exuent. Ah, it's always nice to have some authentic, low-level misogynistic bants between chaps who have literally nothing to say to each other apart from, oh, my wife back home. Oh, the you know, we're about hopping and a skip and jump from mother-in-law jokes, really, here, aren't we? We would be very comfortable in the 1970s. Alan?
I'm just wondering whether the version of the script I've got has been modified, because there are a couple of lines in there that were shown in the script I've got as being Franklin, which Sarah read.
Oh, no, sorry, Alan. That was, I don't know what happened there. Sorry, I just stole all your lines.
Yes, all but one.
Do you want to do the scene over?
I mean, I'm sure the listener at home will be able to transpose the nature of... it's a good point. Is Franklin and Arden are sort of passing this back and forth? I mean, it's like, you know, it's this thing. Okay, there's an interesting question here, because basically this is your taxi man conversation, isn't it? This is the taxi man saying, oh, yeah, my wife, oh, yeah, the problem's at home. And it's a question. When you're in this situation, do you go along with the taxi man's, misogynistic / racist jibes, or do you risk being chucked out on, you know, Hyde Park Corner? What do you go for? So it's a question: are Arden and Ferryman going along with this? I think intellectually they're perfectly capable of going along with this. They've had their moments earlier in the play, or are they just being, going along with the ferryman because they want to get on the boat and he doesn't seem to be in any kind of a hurry to actually do any ferrying. He seems to be faffing around quite a lot. though Arden does make a terrible joke about mist, which I think has to be noted. The mist is mystical. Yeah.
Depends if he's driving, then you definitely don't want to piss him off.
No, especially this is water, because, you know, if you chuck you out of the cab halfway, you're going to swim the rest. No, I'm not. I'm stopping here, mate. I'm stopping here. It's far I'm going. Far I'm going. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's not excessively funny scene, but I don't know if it's even supposed... I mean, is the ferryman supposed to be a clown part? I don't know that it is. I'm not sure this is supposed to be funny in that sense. I mean, obviously, it's setting up atmosphere to a degree. And what the ferryman is saying when he's talking about, obviously, a cursed wife, of course, is setting up questions about, you know, Arden's own wife, who's plotting to murder him. Thoughts, Sarah?
I'm just wondering if you could play this scene a different way. Well, obviously you could if Alan had actually played the part he was supposed to. But I'm just wondering, you know, because this is a play where we know Arden, not Franklin's, going to get murdered. Mm. And we think it's happening fairly soon, although we've thought it's going to be happening fairly soon for several times in the past, and then it hasn't happened. But if it is going to happen fairly soon, I mean, there is, like, you know, ferrymen have connotations, don't they? You know, crossing in a ferry with a boatman, that, you know, you've got, like, connotations of the underworld and death and crossing over and all of that. And so, but it's not that scene. It doesn't go there. It goes off in this, yeah, sort of, it doesn't really go anywhere, really. It's just this sort of... Like you say, dodgy taxi driver sort of scene, and I'm wondering if you could take it in that direction. If there's a way of interpreting the lines that you could make it, you know, that he's quite a sort of creepy ferryman because there is lots of mist, you know. Could you turn this into a sort of, you know, foretelling of death? Maybe this scene. I'm not entirely sure whether you could or not. I think the dialogue sort of fights against that interpretation, but it the fact that this scene is here makes me think that that would be quite a good way to play it.
We do have more ferryman action to come in the next scene, because, again, these scenes are sort of running into each other. We've started a new unit of action with the previous scene, leaving the house to come to here to move on to the next bit. So all of these scenes are effectively, if not always the same location, they're the same unit of action. Here we've got to establish the waterside dynamic, so we're going to need some sounds of water, but it's still, there's a mist. It's quite difficult to design still water. and to get that, there's that sort of outdoor echo, which is quite difficult to get right. And that kind of bounce that the water may do here. But again, I think, Sarah, yeah, you're right. It's that there is an option there that we could go for. And I quite like that. It could be quite dry, if not necessarily fully creepy, rather than ba-dum-ching, which will land very badly, I suspect. Eric?
I was going to say that in the original playing of this, maybe this was a chance for the actors who are playing Will and Shakeback to get, like, drinks or something at the bar before they come back on stage because they're in the next scene. Mm. But, I don't know.
Yes, there is a certain amount of running around.
Doubling and all that.
Okay, let's effectively continue the scene with scene 12. Who was... has anyone been Will or Shakebag so far? No. And just going forward, Ferryman. Who was reading Ferryman? Was that Emma? This is all going to go a bit horribly wrong, so we'll just keep going for the moment. Alan, if you could be Shakebag, Eric, yes, be sir. Will. And we'll trip over everything else in a moment. So, scene 12. Original stage direction here enters Will at one door and Shakebag at another. That's, of course, the structure of a playhouse. They're squelching along at the waterside or whatever noise we're going for here.
Will, where art thou?
Here, Shakebag, almost in Hell's Mouth, where I cannot see my way for smoke.
Pray thee speak still, that we may meet by the sound. I shall fall into some ditch, rather, lest my feet see better than my eyes.
Didst thou ever see better weather to run away with another man's wife, or play with a wench at Potfinger?
Oh, this were a fine world for chandlers, this weather would last. But then a man should never dine nor sup without candlelight. Sir Will, what horses are those that passed?
Why, didst thou hear any?
Aye, that I did.
My life for thine, 'twas Arden and his companion. Then all our labour's lost.
Say not so, for if it be they may haply lose their way as we've done. And then we may chance meet with them.
Come, let's go on like a couple of blind pilgrims.
Then a shakebag falls into a ditch.
Help, Will, help! I'm almost drowned.
Here enters the ferryman.
Who's that calls for help?
'Twas none here, but 'twas thou thyself.
I came to help him that called for help. Why? How now? Who is this that's in the ditch? You are well enough served to go without a guide such weather as this.
Sir, what companies hath passed your ferry this morning?
None but a couple of gentlemen that went to dine at my Lord Cheney's.
Shakebag, did I not tell thee as much?
Why, sir, will you have any letters carried to them?
No, sir, get you gone.
Did you ever see such a mist as this?
No, nor such a fool as Will rather be hot than get his way.
Why, sir, this is no Huff Monday. You are deceived. What's his name, I pray you, sir?
His name is Black Will.
I hope to see him one day hanged upon a hill.
Exit ferryman.
See how the sun hath cleared the foggy mist. Now we've missed the mark of our intent.
And here enters Green, Mosby and Alice, etc. But we'll just pause there because I just want to check a few little bits and pieces here. So, comedy pratfalls from there. I mean, sound effects straightforward enough. So at the end of the previous scene, Arden and Franklin, that's getting in boats sound effects. That's what we need there. Because they're going. Getting in boat. Because they're not going to encounter each other. Water, rowing. That makes life a lot easier. And then we've got squelch, squelch, squelch. To throw into that scene. It's leading much more to the comedy, but I think that ferryman can still be quite deadpan in all of this. There's something quite deadpan about a lot of what he's saying here. And just the way he just goes off and, you know, did you ever see such a mist as this? Which then they state just immediately clears. I'd like to see you hang. There is some real potential for it. Can still be funny, but I think we could be moving more in the River Styx territory here, couldn't we? You know, it's just on his day off. You know, that's what the death does. It's just saunters around doing jokes. And things. Sarah.
Just from a Foley perspective, I'm a little bit concerned about these horses that are mentioned.
Are they real?
Well, maybe they're not. But it's like if Franklin and Arden and the ferryman are already in the water, you know, then which they would be because they've just escaped and gone off across the river. Then why would they then? Why would Will and Shakebag then afterwards be hearing horses? That makes no sense.
Well, if they're hearing horses from the other side of the river.
Oh, I see. So like faint, echoey.
Yeah, that they just hear them. You know, but he might not be here. He might just be in his imagination. He might just be hearing something strange. But yeah, if there are horses at that point,
I think I've noted in my thing
clippy clop.
Clippy clop, yeah. If someone's going to say that line, then there is going to need to be some clippy clop. But I guess it could be far off clippy clop.
Well, they do. He questions whether he heard it. You see, that's why I'm wondering. You see, are the clippy clops real, or are they just in the mind? I think they're probably real, however, by the nature of where the scene goes. I think, yeah, they've just missed Arden again. And in the distance, on the other side of the bank, you can hear the horses going away, which adds something to Alice's previous scene, because if she's trying to slow Arden down, if Arden's leaving the house going, right, I'm going off on an adventure, and Alice is sort of trying to slow his progress, and that's what all the she doesn't care what she's saying, she's just saying words to slow him down a bit, then that gives Alice a nice intention for the way that scene could be played, even though we don't necessarily know that's why she's doing it, and you know, but the actor will know, which is nice to do. Any other thoughts before we finish this scene? There's another little unit of action. Comedy splat, fall in ditch, climb out of ditch, lots of squelching. That'll be a fun one to do the session for. Okay, Alan, what part were you shakebag or...
I was shakebag.
Right, I'll take on shakebag for the duration, and does that work? I think it works. Let's see how it goes. So,
what does that leave me with?
Oh, you're Mosby again, sorry.
Right, okay.
Just return you to Mosby. Because I'll re-shake back and that'll be fine. Just to get us find out the shape of things as we go to the end of the scene. So, anyone been green yet? Nobody been green?
That was easy.
It's not easy being green. Sarah, if you could be green for this scene at least, that would be lovely. Okay, here enters Green, Mosby and Alice.
Well, and Shakebag, what make you here? What is the deed done? Is Arden dead?
What could a blinded man perform in arms? Saw you not how till now the sky was dark that neither horse nor man could be discerned? Yet did we hear their horses as they passed?
They escaped you then and passed the ferry?
Aye, for a while. But here we too will stay, and at their coming back, meet with them once more. Zooms! I was ne'er so toiled in all my life in following so slight a task as this.
How camest thou so bewrayed?
With making false footing in the dark, he needs would follow them without a guide.
Here's to pay for a fire and good cheer. Get you to Faversham, to the Flower de Luce, and rest yourselves until some other time.
Sorry. Let me alone, it most concerns my state.
Aye, Mistress Arden, this will serve the turn in case we fall into a second fog.
Exeunt, Green, Will and Shakebag.
These knaves will never do it. Let's give it over.
First, tell me how you like my new device. Soon, when my husband is returning back, you and I, both marching arm in arm, like loving friends, will meet him on the way, and boldly beard and brave him to his teeth. When words grow hot and blows begin to rise, I'll call those cutters forth your tenement, who, in a manner to take up the fray, shall wound my husband Hornsby to the death.
A fine device. Why, this deserves a kiss.
And we can infer a kiss as they exit. Okay. Just on a general thing here. So, in theory... Will and etc. are all waiting for them to come back. So they're going to murder them on the way back. If that doesn't work, Alice and Mosby are going to there doing sexy times in front of him to get him into a rage so that they can claim self-defense. Where's the crucifix in this? I don't know where the crucifix is coming into this. Okay, Alan.
Who is Hornsby?
Her husband. She's the Horns. We're talking cuckolding here.
Oh, right. So yeah. Nickname.
Yeah. Well, they'll be talking about him. They've been cuckolding him for quite a while, so yeah, we can infer that.
Yeah. Sorry, it's some while since I last was involved with reading on this piece, so. I've sort of lost the thread of it.
Do we tweak Flower de Luce to Fleur de Lis? I quite like it being a bit sort of thunkingly anglicised in that way. I don't know how authentic Flower de Luce is for all the text. I must double check that. Sarah?
Well, funnily enough, I just looked it up. There was a pub in Faversham called the Fleur de Lys. It's now actually a museum, town centre museum and tourist information centre, but the building is still there and it was called the Fleur de Lys.
Mm. I'm just talking about the text of the play, whether it's authentically spelt that way or whether...
No, it was known as, the original was the Fleur de Lys. Fleur de Lys, that's how it was. So I guess that's... I don't know. Actually, though, this is 1653. So that's quite a lot later.
Mm.
So maybe it was the Fleur de Luce originally. Yeah.
Textually, it's Fleur de Luce, and it's pretty much as it is in this script here. So, it doesn't rhyme or anything, does it? No. Alan, and then Eric.
I'm just wondering, in fact, whether you could use it almost to distinguish between the classes of the characters, that the posher ones might actually make a decent stab at fleur-de-lis, and the lower class characters, it's the flower de luce.
I don't know if enough people are going to bring it up. But it could be played around with in that way. Eric?
I was just going to say that I nearly went, in case we fall into a second bog as opposed to fog, which is kind of, it was tempting, just because of what happened to Shake Bag. But yeah, there's a part of me going, the timing doesn't really work because they went for dinner and they're coming back later. So like, but then it's daylight. What's going on here?
Alan, I think.
Dinner would be midday in this period.
Yeah, we
that's
have a
the main meal of the day.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, you can say dinner pretty much any time of the day, depending what part of the country you are. You can even get away with it for breakfast sometimes. It's this proliferation of murder attempts here. It's just so many of them that they just keep spreading. Any other thoughts about this scene? All quite straightforward setting wise. The sun's come out, but I don't think we can demonstrate that on, you know, audio. I don't think there's anything we can add to that as a thing. Okay, scene 13 then. We've got some random people. enter Dick Reed and a sailor. So, Eric, you feeling sailory?
Aye, aye, Captain.
Yeah, yeah. And Alan, but you can be Dick.
Thank you, sir.
No, actually, were you Franklin earlier?
I was.
Yeah, then you can't be. Emma, you can be Dick Reed. And that should get us a little bit further forward. Yes, that will vaguely works. So, scene 13, here enters Dick Reed and a sailor.
Faith, Dick Reed is to little end, his conscience is too liberal, and he do niggly to part from anything may do thee good.
He is coming from Shorlow, as I understand. Here I'll intercept him, for at his house he never will vouchsafe to speak with me, if prayers and fair entreaties will not serve, or make no battery in his flinty breast.
Here enters Franklin Arden and Michael.
I'll curse the carl and see what that will do. See where he comes to further my intent. Master Arden, I am now bound to the sea. My coming to you was about the plat of ground which wrongfully you detained from me. Although the rent of it be very small, yet it will help my wife and children, which here I leave in Faversham, God knows, needy and bare. For Christ's sake, let them have it.
Franklin, hearest thou this fellow speak? That which he craves, I daily bought of him, although the rent of it was ever mine. Sirrah, you that ask these questions, if with thy clamorous, impeaching tongue thou rail on me, as I have heard thou dost, I'll lay thee up so close a 12-month's day as thou shalt neither see the sun nor moon. Look to it, for As surely as I live, I'll banish pity if thou use me thus.
What? Will thou do me wrong and threaten me too? Nay then, I'll tempt thee, Arden, do thy worst. God, I beseech thee, show some miracle on thee or thine, in plaguing thee for this. That plot of ground, which thou detains from me, I speak it in an agony of spirit, be ruinous and fatal unto thee. Either there be butchered by thy dearest friends, or else brought for men to wonder at, or else be brought for men to wonder at, or thou or thine miscarry in that place, or there run mad and end thy cursed days.
Aye, bitter knave, bridle thine envious tongue. The curses are like arrows shot upright, which falling down, light on the shooter's head.
Light where they will. Were I upon the sea, as oft I have in many a bitter storm, and saw a dreadful southern flaw at hand, the pilot quaking at the doubtful storm, and all the sailors praying on their knees, even in that fearful time would I fall down and ask of God, whatever betide of me, vengeance on Arden, or some misevent to show the world what wrong the carle hath done. This charge I'll leave with my distressful wife. My children shall be taught such prayers as these, and thus I go, but leave my curse with thee.
Exuent reed and person he needed to talk to introduce the theme of the scene, the sailor.
It is the railingest knave in Christendom, and oftentimes the villain will be mad. It greatly matters not what he says, but I assure you I ne'er did him wrong.
I think so, Master Arden.
Now that our horses are gone home before, my wife may haply meet me on the way, for God knows she's grown passing kind of late, and greatly changed from the old humour of her wonted frowardness, and seeks by fair means to redeem old faults.
Happy the charge, the change that alters for the best. But see, in any case, you make no speech of the cheer we had at my Lord Cheney's, although most bounteous and liberal. That will make herself more wrong, in that we did not carry her along. For sure she grieved that she was left behind.
Come, Franklin, let us strain to mend our pace and take her unawares playing the cook.
And we'll just pause there because we've sort of slipped tracks a little bit. So, the sailor and reed scene, is part of me thinking this scene could be moved. Because we have established at the beginning of the play Arden's sharp practice with land. And we've got this providential cursing of intimations of murder. I don't know if Reed should probably get, you know, hanged as a witch for what he does in this scene. And so there's part of me thinking, oh, could we put this early in the play to set up sort of twangly things? I quite like it here as it functions differently if you place it here, because it has that sort of dramatic irony comedy edge to it if you put it here, rather than ominous. It's like, yeah, we know everyone wants you dead. You're just adding, it would be ironic if Reed then just turned up with a gun and just shoots him at the end. And it's the one you weren't expecting. And Alice is going, oh, for sake, we've been trying all week to get rid of him. That is not where the player is going. But yeah, I'm just now idly thinking about that. I don't think you need to move it or do anything with it. I like it as a scene, but I'm just putting it out there. There's an interesting what happens to a play if you put this at the beginning of the play. It's ominous. If you put it here, it's playing into various ironies. Sarah.
Well, also, I'm assuming, and again, I haven't read the real life account, so I don't know, but I'm assuming Reed was another potential suspect, because I'm guessing that's why we've got this scene. If he had been seen, if there were witnesses who had seen him cursing Arden and sort of saying, oh, I'll get you, and complaining to him because he'd, you know, done him out of this land, then presumably Alice and Mosby could then say as part of their defense, oh, well, loads of people hated him. And here's another example. And I mean, Franklin is a witness to this scene, and the random sailor as well, if he's actually a real person. And I'm just wondering if this is what actually happened, that Reed was pulled in as a potential suspect.
Hmm. I'm not seeing it just scanning through the account at all. It seems potentially made up. Beyond an expert. So of it, he's mentioned. I think it must be at the end of the account. Hang on. It's sort of mentioned in passing. Richard Reed, a mariner. Yes, so. It's mentioned in passing at the end of the account.
Okay.
So having gone through the account of his horrible murder and what Alice did and all the things, this one thing might seem very strange and notable, touching Master Arden, that in the place where he was laid, being dead, he's going to die, by the way, all the proportion of his body might be seen for 2 years after and more, so plain as they could be, etc., etc. Strange portents. Which field he had, as some reported, most cruelly taken from a woman that had been a widow to one cook and after married to one Richard Reed, a mariner, to the great hindrance of her and her husband, the said Reed, for they had long enjoyed it by a lease, which they had it for many years, not then expired. Nevertheless, he got it from them. For the which, the said Reed's wife not only exclaimed against him, in shedding many a salt tear, but also cursed him most bitterly even to his face, wishing many a vengeance to light upon him, and that all the world might wonder on him, which was thought then to come to pass, when he was thus murdered, and lay in that field from midnight till the morning, and so all that day being a fair day till night, all the which day there were many hundreds of people came wondering about him, and thus far touching this horrible and heinous murder of Master Arden. So it is straight out of the account, but it's something that is sort of doesn't have a place within the narrative flow of the story of Arden. It's saying like, oh yeah, I forgot to mention there was this other guy, and his wife. It's the wife who did the railing. Here it's Reed himself. I'm almost tempted to actually say, shall we make the sailor Reed and Reed the wife? That might be an interesting play around, to give that an element that might yield interesting results. I don't know. Alan?
That would certainly give you a better variety of voices.
Mm, yes.
Because effectively the only strong female character we've had in this is Alice, isn't it?
Yes. Though we will inevitably mix up the actual gender of performances for the recording itself. Sarah?
Yeah, it would also weirdly make it closer to the original account. I mean, I assume it was changed for practical matters because when it was performed, you know, it was easier to cast a male actor than to find an actor who could actually do a woman for such a small part. But yeah, to actually change it back would take it closer to the to what actually happened. So that would be quite cool.
Yeah, I'm liking that. Okay. Yeah, make that Dick and make Dick his lady. As it were. That could have gone better as a sentence. Mrs. Dick. Right. Okay. Let us see where this scene is going, because we've had various possible directions where this is going. Again, we've got the irony card playing throughout this of Arden going, "Oh, my wife will hopefully meet me here. This will all go well, won't it?" And again, and also just that question of what Franklin is in this. You know, Franklin is enabling him to be really shitty to people about land. You know, this is not showing a nice side to Arden, and this is an important element. You know, he is full of sharp practice, which of course makes him all the more murderable, because of course it means he has more money and therefore increases the motive. So this is where I'm not sure whether the doubling's gonna work anymore. It might all fall apart a bit. Because Mosby and Franklin and Shakebag and stuff. So, Eric, could you read Mosby for the moment? I will read Shakebag, and I think we might just about get to the end of the scene with our skin intact. Okay, here enters Will and... Oh, no, sorry, I'm skipped ahead. Here enters Alice and Mosby. Sorry, Arden's still speaking, but is muted at present.
Sorry. I'm just going to go back and do
go
the
back a couple of
speech.
Lines, yeah.
Yeah.
Take the stage direction as read.
Come, Franklin. Better strain to mend our pace and take her unawares playing the cook, for I believe she'll strive to mend our cheer.
Why, there's no better creatures in the world than women when they're in good humours.
Who is that? Mosby? What, so familiar? Injurious strumpet, and thou, ribald knave, untwine those arms.
Aye. Oh, with a sugared kiss, let them untwine.
Oh, Mosby! Urged beast, bear this and all.
And yet no sugar, no horned beast, the horns are thine.
Oh, monstrous! Nay, then it's time to draw.
Help! Help! They murder my husband!
Here enters Will and Shakebag. Zoons! Who injures Master Mosby? Help! Will! I am hurt!
I may thank you, Mistress Arden, for this wound.
And exuant Mosby, Will, and Shakebag.
Oh, Arden! What folly blinded thee? Oh, jealous harebrained man, what hast thou done? When we, to welcome thee with intended sport, came lovingly to meet thee on the way, thou drewst thy sword in rage with jealousy and hurt thy friend, whose thoughts were free from harm. All for a worthless kiss and joining arms, both done but merrily to try thy patience. And me, unhappy that devised the jest, which, though begun in sport, yet ends in blood.
Marry, God defend me from such a jest.
Couldst thou not see us friendly smile on thee when we joined arms and when I kissed his cheek? Or hast thou not lately found me overkind? Didst thou not hear me cry, they murder thee? Called I not help to set my husband free? No, ears and all were witched, oh, me accursed, to link in liking with a frantic man. Henceforth I'll be thy slave, no more thy wife. For with that name I never shall content thee. If I be merry, thou straightway think'st me light. If sad, thou sayest the sullens trouble me. If, when attired, thou think'st I will be gadding. If homely, ah, I seem sluttish in thy eye. Thus am I still, and shall be when I die. Poor wench, abused by thy misgovernment.
Is it for truth that neither thou nor he intendest malice in your misdemeanour?
The heavens can witness of our harmless thoughts.
Then pardon me, sweet Alice, and forgive this fault. Forget but this, and never see the like. Impose me penance, and I will perform it, for in thy discontent I find a death tormenting more than death itself.
Nay, hadst thou loved me, as thou dost pretend, thou wouldst have marked the speeches of thy friend, who, going wounded from the place, he said his skin was pierced only through my device. And if sad sorrow taint thee for this fault, thou wouldst have followed him and seen him dressed and cried him mercy, whom thou hast misdone. Ne'er shall my heart be eased till this be done.
Content thee, sweet Alice. Thou shalt have thy will, whate'er it be. For that I injured thee and wronged my friend, shame scourgeth my offence. Come thou thyself, and go along with me, and be a mediator twixt us two.
Why, Master Arden, know you what you do? Do you follow him that has dishonoured you?
Why, canst thou prove I have been disloyal?
Why, Mosby taunted your husband with the horn.
Aye, after he had reviled him by the injurious name of perjured beast. He knew no wrong could spite a jealous man more than the hateful naming of the horn.
Suppose 'tis true. Yet is it dangerous to follow him whom he hath lately heard?
A fault confessed is more than half amends. But men of such ill spirit as yourself work crosses and debates twixt man and wife.
I pray thee, gentle Franklin, hold thy peace. I know my wife counsels me for the best. I'll seek out Mosby, where his wound is dressed, and solve this hapless quarrel, if I may.
And exit Arden and Alice.
He whom the devil drives must go perforce. Poor gentleman, how soon he is bewitched. And yet, because his wife is the instrument, his friends must not be lavish in their speech.
Exit Franklin, unimpressed. Okay, so I have been adding some stage directions in there, which we don't have in the version we were looking at. So there's lots of drawing of swords. Shing! Sound effects to throw in there. We've got a fight scene. Shakebag and Mosby both are best. So, you know, Arden's handy in a fight. I don't know how handy yet Franklin is. So considering the odds, what goes on here? And then Alice somehow talks them round. I mean, wow. That's quite a turnaround because, you know, it's a question of how intimate they are. I mean, we don't have a, you know, enters Alice and Mosby. They are familiar with each other. There is the suggestion of a kiss, but what kind of... I mean, I don't think we can go for full make-out because she'd never turn it around later on. So the dialogue explicates what's supposed to be going on. It was set up earlier, so I don't think we need to go... or anything like that, because you know there are limits. But yeah, it's again this weird scene where murderous Phaelus once again just they totally banjacks. And then I say it's all down to Alice somehow. She's really knows how to work him, doesn't she? She's but then I suppose she's been married to him for a while. So but Franklin not impressed. Again, busy on action, but it's kind of action I think is easy enough to clarify what's going on. I don't think there's any lack of clarity as to there's a fight happens. Shakebag says, I'm hurt. Mosby says, he's hurt. They run away. Maybe need to throw some slightly dodgy lines in to just explicate who's exiting. But otherwise, I think that's okay. Sarah.
Yes, you might have to explain the will bit to me because I'm slightly confused by that. So Arden goes for Mosby. Franklin draws as well. Alice says, help, help, they murder my husband. Mm-hmm. And then we have the entrance of Will and Shakebag, and Shakebag's immediately saying, Zunes who injures Master Mosby, help.
So
Will,
he comes on and going, who's attacking my friend Mosby? That's
and
what
then,
he's saying.
And then Franklin turns on him, presumably, and because Arden's going for Mosby, so presumably he comes on and says, oh, who's attacking Master Mosby? And Franklin turns around and hits him. Well, you know, swipes
well, they're
at
all,
him
they're,
with his sword.
They're, it's two on two, isn't it? So
yeah. So he just kind of
three
comes
on,
in.
Three on two, I suppose. It depends what Shakespeare's doing, really, here. Shakespeare, what Will's doing here. Is Will actually actively engaged in the fight?
No, well, actually, it's Shakespeare. So Shakespeare comes on and says, oh, Master Mosby's ill. Maybe he draws as well. And Franklin turns on him and hurts him.
Could be Franklin. Could be Arden.
Could be
any of them. But they're okay. Basically, there's a fight involving five people. And so Alice and Mosby have created the pretext for Shakebag and Will to come on and do the murder. Mm. But Arden and Franklin are so handy in a fight that they can take off three men. I'm assuming Mosby actually isn't actively in the fight because of who Mosby is. You know, they've got their hired murderers. They've set up the pretext. And it turns out, actually... Arden and Franklin used to go to fencing school when they were younger, and they've got their katars out, and they're taking it all down.
So that's another plot that's gone wrong.
Yeah. So it, as
where's
it
the crucifix?
When's the crucifix turning up? Yeah, I know. the crucifix is just such a red herring. I'm sorry.
They could have killed him like three scenes ago with the crucifix. But yeah,
I am starting to think maybe cut the crucifix.
Yeah,
because I like it, but I don't think it's in the original at all, and it's been added, but it goes nowhere, and it's so weird, really weird crucifix thing.
Yeah, if it's not in the original, I think maybe just quietly cut that.
I don't think it's in the source at all. I need to do a more detailed. We have looked at the source, and I have been scanning through it, but I kind of need to do a word search and just double check that there is no mention to crucifixes. but yeah, again, nothing that is immediately leaping out of me going, what the hell are we going to do? Alan.
I must admit, I'm still seeing Will and Shakebag as the broker's men. And therefore, one possible bit of action within the fight is that inadvertently Will and Shakebag damage each other.
I think for audio, we'll never make that clear. I think you're right. For a stage show, you absolutely could have a field day with that fight. I think it could be extensive and very silly. But I don't think for audio, we might need to add in a bit more to me, Will, you know, from you, you know, oh, yeah, oh, he's getting, yeah, you know, there could be a lot of extemporized, very bad dialogue that we might need to put in just to really make it clear who's winning. Okay, we're going to go a little further than planned. We're going to crash into scene 14. We may not finish scene 14. I say we may not. We're not going to finish scene 14. But we may reach a crucial point. There is an issue with scene 14. A few too many people turn up later on. And we don't have a large enough room. So scene 14, we have Will, Shakebag and Green. It's going to get very crowded here. We're going to have Alice and Michael turning up later on. And then Mosby and things. So everyone's popping in and out. So we're going to have to dance around a little bit. So I'm going to say, Alan, if you could read Will this time. Eric, if you could be Green. I'll stay with Shakebag, and then we've got Alice and coming in later on. So Eric, could you read Michael and Sarah, if you could be Green for the moment. Hope that wasn't too confusing, because I can't remember who I am now. I'm still Shakebag. Okay, that's okay. It will all be fine. Scene 14, here enters Will, Shakebag and Green.
Sarah Green, when was I so long in killing a man?
I think we shall never do it. Let us give it over.
Nay, zoons, we'll kill him, though we be hanged at his door for our labour.
Thou knowest, Green, that I've lived in London this 12 years. I've made some go up on wooden legs for taking the wall on me. Divers with silver noses for saying, there goes Black Will. I've cracked as many blades as thou hast nuts.
Oh, monstrous lie.
Faith, in a manner I have. The bawdy houses have paid me tribute. There durst not a whore set up unless she have agreed with me first for opening her shop windows. The cross word of a tapster, I pierced one barrel after another with my dagger and held him by the ears till all his beer hath run out. In Thames Street, a brewer's cart was like to have run over me. I made no more ado, but went to the clerk and cut all the notches of his tallies and beat them about his head. I and my company have taken the constable from his watch and carried him about the fields on a colt staff. I've broken a sergeant's head with his own mace and bailed through my list with my sword buckler. All the tenpenny alehouse men would stand every morning with a quart pot in their hand, saying, will it please your worship drink? He that had not done so, he had been sure to have his daddy's sign pulled down and his lasses borne away the next night. To conclude, what have I not done? It cannot do this. Doubtless, he is preserved by a miracle.
Before we go on, just to note that this is, we're in a pub or similar type establishment. This is an interior setting, probably. I don't know if we're literally at the Fleur-de-Lis or whether we're just, as mentioned earlier, but... are we indoors or is it, yeah.
I think so, because, well...
Or are we heading towards being indoors? Are they actually heading towards the place? I think we're indoors. Or as far as I'm concerned, we're going to be indoors because we've just had an outdoor scene, and we've just finished the previous unit of action, as it were. We're going into a sort of setting up kind of thing. They're licking their wounds, and this little unit of action that we've got here at the beginning of scene 14 is all about. Give Alice and Mosby time to have gotten off stage and then come back on again. That's basically what this Will's long speech is all about. It's nice material, but it is basically structural. It's not actually important. It's just to break up the bit before. Any other thoughts on where we are? Am I right on this point?
I think you are. I mean, well, put it this way, even if you're not, I think for audio, you'd want to set this in a pub. But that line that Green has, I think we shall never do it. Let us give it over. That seems to be the sort of thing that you would say afterwards, you know, when you were kind of reviewing the day over a glass of something. Yeah. And Will bragging as well. I mean, that is kind of, you know, bragging in a pub. That's kind of the traditional setting, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Well, are they back at the main house? Because I'm getting confused because there's all this discussion of, you know, tempany alehouses and all the rest of it. So, maybe they're waiting outside the doors and they're about to go in. Anyway, we'll resolve that issue as we get further into the scene. But I was quite liking my setup. Maybe we could just break it up and just have them in the pub. And then we'll relocate the next bit and have them meet up. I don't know. I'm just thinking about breaking up these scenes a little bit. Eric, were you waving?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I like how Green has not really been involved in the physical stuff, and he just kind of goes, yeah, let's just quit, you know, we should just stop. It's like, yeah, because he's totally, I mean, he's invested, but he's only invested, like, he's not been injured or actually done anything.
No, I mean, he's the procurer. I mean, it's not his job. He is there to hire them, and he's sort of going, you know what, you've got half your money. Maybe you just call it quits. You know, I'm not that fussed about, you know, who I marry. Kind of logic. So yeah, bad job. I mean, it's a cursed job, clearly. Okay, let's gather some more data. Here enters Alice and Michael, and hopefully the scene still functions.
Ence, Will. Here comes Mistress Arden.
Ah, gentle Michael. Art thou sure they're friends?
Why, I saw them when they both shook hands, when Mosby bled, he even wept for sorrow and railed on Franklin that was cause of all. No sooner came the surgeon in at doors, but my master took to his purse and gave him money. I had to conclude, sent to me to bring you word that Mosby, Franklin, Bradshaw, Adam Fowle, with diverse of his neighbours and friends, will come and sup with you at our house this night.
Oh, gentle Michael, run thou back again, and when my husband walks into the fair, bid Mosby steal from him and come to me. And this night shall thou and Susan be made sure.
I'll go and tell him.
And as thou goest, tell John Cook of our guests and bid him lay it on, spare for no cost.
And exit Michael.
Aye, and to be such cheer, we will bid ourselves. Mistress Arden, Dick Green and I do mean to sup with you.
And welcome shall you be. Oh, gentlemen, how missed you of your purpose yesternight?
It was long of shake bag, that unlucky villain.
No, dost thou me wrong? I did as much as any.
Nay then, Mistress Arden, I'll tell you how it was. When he should have locked with both his hilts, he in a bravery flourished o'er his head. With that comes Franklin at him lustily and hurts the slave. With that he slinks away. Now his way had been to have come hand and feet, one and two round at his costard. He, like a fool, bears his sword point half a yard out of danger. I lie here for my life. If the devil come and he shall have no more strength than I have fence, he shall never beat me from this ward. Stand to it. Buckler in a skilful hand is as good as a castle. Nay, 'tis better than a sconce, for I tried it. Bosley, perceiving this, began to faint. With that comes Arden with his arming sword and thrust him through the shoulder in a trice.
Aye, but I wonder why you both stood still.
Faith, I was so amazed I could not strike.
Oh, sirs, had he yesternight been slain, for every drop of his detested blood, I would have crammed in angels in my fist and kissed thee too and hugged thee in my arms.
Patient yourself. We cannot help it now. Green and we two will dog him through the fair and stab him in the crowd. Steal away.
And here enters Mosby, but we'll pause there. So once again, we're getting this sort of blow by blow match summary of the previous game of Killing Arden. So it's time has passed as well. So we've got this time jump. I think we're back at home. Tell the cook on your way out. Kind of suggestion here. It's the kind of thing where I should remember these details in advance, you know, from basic reading of the play that we're working on. I apologise for my lack of planning. Are we at the pub? Are we just at the pub? It seems to be a parlour. I think in the original they're supposed to be at home, but maybe we're at the fleur-de-lis. But I'm slightly unclear at the moment as to these details. Sarah?
It's not clear. I think it's definitely indoors. And I just think for the purposes of audio, it would be quite good to put it in the pub. Because then you could do pub sounds. Mm. And it would because there are a lot of people in this scene. I know we've had a lot of people early on. We had a lot of people coming in and out of the Arden house. But I think there's something about the idea of people coming in and chatting and then leaving. Like, I don't know. It seems to me that a pub would work really well as a place where all these different people are meeting, because you've got Alice and Mosby and Green and Will and Shakebag. And Michael, you've got like all the different plotters from all the different plots kind of coming together here. So I guess you could put it in the house, but I don't know. I feel a pub would just work really well for, as an audio setting.
Mm. Yeah. Obviously we're about to get to the murder, so which I'm fairly certain happens at home, but I am finding this text slightly wibbly at this point, but we've had some slightly wibbly moments as to where the location is and location shifting during scenes, so maybe this is just a thing. Let us gather a little more data. We're getting close to the murder is any minute now. Murder will occur. We're not going to get to it today, but we are getting there. So anyway, here enters Mosby. I think... Eric is going to read Mosby, and that will be fine. So.
It is impossible, but here comes he that will, I hope, invent some surer means. Sweet Mosby, hide thy arm, it kills my heart.
Aye, Mistress Arden, this is your favour.
Oh, say not so, for when I saw thee hurt, I could have took the weapon thou lettest fall and run at Arden, for I have sworn that these mine eyes, offended with his sight, shall never close till Arden's be shut up. This night I rose and walked about the chamber, and twice or thrice I thought to have murdered him.
What, in the night? Then had we been undone.
Why, how long shall he live?
Faith, Alice, no longer than this night. Black Will and Chickback, will you two perform the complot that I've laid?
Aye, or else think me a villain.
And rather you shall want, I'll help myself.
You, Master Green, shall single Franklin forth, and hold him with long tale of strange news, that he may not come home till supper time. I will fetch... I'll fetch Master Arden home, and we like friends will play a game or two at tables here.
But what of all this? How shall he be slain?
Why, Black Will and Shakebag locked within the counting house shall, as a certain watchword, given rush forth.
What shall watchword be?
Now I take you. That shall be the word. But come not forth before, in any case.
I warrant you. But who shall lock me in?
That will I do. Thou keep the key thyself.
Come, Master Green, go you along with me. See all things ready, Alice, against we come.
Take no care for that. Send you him home.
Exeunt Maltby and Green.
And if he e'er go forth again, blame me. Come, Black Will, that in mine eyes art fair, next unto Maltby do I honour thee. Instead of fair words and large promises, my hand shall play you golden harmony. How like you this? Say, will you do it, sirs?
Aye, and that bravely too, mark my device. Place Maltby, being a stranger, in a chair, and let your husband sit upon a stool, that I may come behind him cunningly, and with a towel pull him to the ground, and stab him till his flesh be as a sieve. That done, bear him behind the abbey, that those that find him murdered may suppose some slave or other killed him for his gold.
A device. You shall have £20, and when he is dead, you shall have 40 more. And, lest you might be suspected staying here, Michael shall saddle you 2 lusty geldings, ride whether you will, to Scotland or to Wales. I'll see you shall not lack, where'er you be.
Such words would make one kill 1,000 men. Give me the key. Which is the counting house?
Here would I stay and still encourage you, but that I know how resolute you are.
Ah, tush, you are too faint-hearted. We must do it.
But Maltby will be there, whose very looks will add unwonted courage to my thought, and make me the first that shall adventure on him.
Tush, get you gone. Tis we must do the deed. When this door opens next, look for his death.
Exeunt Will and Shakebag, and there we will pause. It's interesting, this headlong rush. We have spent the entire play pulling together ridiculous plots, or perfectly reasonable plots that just go badly wrong in ridiculous ways. Always away from the house, always with intermediaries, never getting actively involved, finding pretexts, and now it's just kill him in the counting house, kill him, get him in the parlour, put him on a stool, let's just kill him and get rid of the body and put it somewhere else. And it's just like, it's this spiral at the end of just like, we've tried being clever, or what we think of as clever, the crucifix has been forgotten. The crucifix is making no appearance. It's not even a MacGuffin. It doesn't even ascend that level of plot device. It is just a sort of superfluous bit of action that goes nowhere. I'm definitely thinking that maybe actually we just quietly drop the whole subplot there, and that we don't need to see that cat. And that solves the problem about the randomly beating Michael's head, because Michael seems fine. Just saying, he seems fine, so I don't think we need to break his head. I don't think we need that bit of action at all. Maybe there was a hilarious bit where the crucifix scene went wrong as well, and they just got cut in previews, and the rest of it just got stuck in. But yeah, what I like about this is they're explaining the action that's about to happen. And it will, broadly speaking, coincide. We have now established, after lengthy faffing around, that we are at Arden's house. Which is a bit weird, because for some reason, Will Green and Shakebag are just sitting around in the kitchen or something or other. You know, it's sort of, that's weird. Unless they're outside the house, just lingering, and then they go in when Alice and Michael arrive. And that gives us some business of moving into the house, doors opening, walking down corridors. We could go with something like that. I quite like the idea of trying to just detach that little mini beginning of the scene to just have it in the pub, just go, God, this went, and then, you know, try and find some interpolated line to say, you know, as we cut to the next day. Because, you know, time has passed, they have the match report about what went wrong, and Alice is just so keyed up and wanting to do the murder. Can we just do the murder now? Can we do the murder? Alan.
I must admit, when we first went at the beginning of that scene, I was thinking it was outside the house.
I think it might actually be how it's supposed to be.
With the three ne'er-do-wells sort of loitering around. And then basically when Alice and Michael arrive, they're then taken inside.
Okay. We will, Sarah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, if you cut the odd word, you could actually have this whole scene in the pub. We'll play a game or two at tables here. If you just cut that here, and then there's another line somewhere else further down, which I've lost now. But basically, if you just tweaked a couple of lines, you could put this whole thing in the pub, and then actually swap it to the house, like before the murder actually takes place, with somebody's entrance or exit.
Because what you could do is you could have, you know, slightly tweak Will's line, you know, get you gone, we must do the deed, when his door opens next, look for his death. Cut scene, yeah. Alice at home, new scene,
yes.
Setting up, doing the monologue that we're about to, is about to happen, and that time has jumped, you know, a couple of hours.
That would make more sense as well, because it wouldn't all be so rushed.
Mm.
I just wanted to point something else out as well. I don't know if this is going to be relevant, but we've had a couple of shots across the bows from Mosby at Alice. After Arden prangs him with his sword, he said something like, "Oh, I've got you to thank for this wound, Mistress Alice." And then when he comes in to the pub or wherever they are, and she says, "Oh no, the sight of your arm is just, it hurts my heart." And he says to her, "I, Mistress Arden, this is your favor. Like this is," which I assume means this is your fault. This is like down to you. So we've had a couple of quite sort of, they're not belligerent lines, but it's like he's certainly blaming her. And I'm just coupling those lines with what the speech he had in the previous session, where, you know, he was all in favor of murdering her. And I'm wondering, I don't know what happens in the actual account, whether she ends up being murdered as well. But like the play is certainly setting him up that we've had a couple of flags. It's like, oh, once Arden's been done in, he's maybe going to do in Alice as well.
The only additional murders are other than Arden are judicial. So if he had any intention, then he never got round to actualizing any additional things there. Just looking ahead, is it, if we're saying that this we are mooting the concept that we are bifurcating this scene into two scenes, with some minor very minor textual adjustments. So that this is all set in the snug of the pub or something or other, and they're all sat in there popping in and out, and that gives us a different universe to go from, and that the scene now continues back at home a little later on. That I think is a nice idea. Of course, our listeners at home might think it's a terrible idea, and by the time this audio actually goes out, we won't have recorded it yet, but we might be in the lower stages of production. So if you really hate the idea, you know, give us a buzz. You know, tell us how much you hate the idea. Because, you know, I've never known anyone interested in the early modern drama to be finickety about changing lines. I mean, everyone's really open about the idea and never have an issue with anyone making egregious changes. We're not going to make egregious changes, but we might tweak. And in recording any of our plays, what we try to do is we record a plain text version that is textually accurate for those who just want to listen to the words in the right order. And then we do make adaptations. And this play so far has been very unadapted, actually. We have not been taught. The only changes we're actively looking at the moment is to curtail the crucifix, which we might look at again when we run this at pace going forward. And maybe, I say, slightly adjusting the location of some of the scenes. That so far is it. It's going reasonably well. Any final thoughts on the adaptive front from the room before we close this particular session, as we've effectively ended scene 14A, as I'm now calling it? Any final thoughts? Anyone wants to throw in? You're under no three-line whip to say anything. If you have nothing to say, I won't make you. Alan?
There was one piece earlier. It was in the first scene we did just before my Zoom session died, where Michael was talking about having mislaid his purse. And it just struck me he was talking about having 30 shillings or something like that in it, which seemed like a devil of a lot of money for a serving man at that period.
I don't know now because it's so far back. I've just turned to the page and I'm trying to figure out. It might be pieces of silver logic, but I don't know. Seek his purse. Are your horses ready? But I'm not ready, for I've lost my purse with 6 and 30 shillings in it, with taking up of my master's nag.
Just seemed like a considerable sum of money for someone who's been portrayed so far as being a relatively low status character.
It is a good point. I've got a footnote that notes exactly the same thing without giving any reason for it at all. I mean, it's a good reason why he doesn't want to be, you know, why he wants to linger behind, because, you know, that's a lot of money for anyone, to be honest. Even if you had a lot of cash, you still don't want to lose, you know, if you've got a wallet full of several, you know, thousand, you know, 100 or even 1,000 quid, you're going to want to find it, even if you're loaded. It's a good point, of which no additional thought is available. Sarah?
Right at the very beginning, in the dim and distant past, I seem to recall the first plot that was ever mentioned was just Alice straightforwardly paying Michael because he was Arden's, you know, serving man, to actually murder him on the way to London. And I can't quite remember now why that didn't happen. Michael had a change of heart or whatever. So maybe she paid him then. I guess. I mean, I don't remember any money exchanging hands, but it was more about the promising Susan to him, like basically pimping out Susan. But maybe that's where he got the money. I don't know.
It would make sense that Alice has been throwing some cash around, because, you know, there's a lot of murder plots going on here. That might be an element that could be more dealt with in, and as we're probably cutting the bit of dialogue that refers to the purse, it probably doesn't matter. And on that note, I'm going to close the session. We will have one more session. We're going to kill Arden. We are. In the final session, and then we will be doing a second look, fast-paced run of Arden Fathomsham. Fingers crossed, he said. I say we are. The second looks are always a bit contingent on how many readers we can get together, but this is a relatively tight place, which should be plausible. And we're going to find out how it runs again at pace, and then hopefully We will be able to do a full cast audio adaptation going forward in the future. And if you want to hear more of that, if you want to support that happening, go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/beyondshakespeare. You get a chance every year to vote for the plays we're going to do next. This one didn't quite make it as an absolute guaranteed one, but it got pretty close. So if you vote for it, it will probably happen. You can also just bung us a one-off on ko-fi.com/BeyondShakespeare. And yes, you will be able to support the work we do and request the kind of things you want us to do. And you get all sorts of bonus stuff as well if you want to do those things. On the Patreon, there are all sorts of releases that people get extra. At least one exclusive thing a week and one early access thing a week, plus additional bonus things once a month. That's the current release at time of recording this. It may be more by the time this actually goes out. So there. So all that remains to thank all the wonderful readers, Emma, Sarah, Alan and Eric, for all their wonderful reading. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye. Arden must die.